Good morning, everyone. Sorry, I can't see the people behind me. It feels a little disrespectful for me. But everyone can hear me okay?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, good. Well, Happy New Year. First time I've seen a number of people for 2023. I remember once many years ago, some old guy told me that time speeds up as you get older. And he's right. It seems to speed up. Somehow 2023 seems unimaginable to me, and yet here we are. Well, you know, in the West, there's a tradition of making New Year's resolutions. I don't know if people do that as much anymore, but it used to be pretty popular, or more common, at least when I was younger. The idea to kind of improve your life, right? To, you know, drop a few pounds, you know, build up some muscles, something like that. And most resolutions would quickly fall to the wayside, like so many attempts we of our own self-improvement projects. And I have never been one for making resolutions. Although I don't think there's anything wrong with them. After all, a sincere resolution can be a starting point for perhaps living one's life in a fuller or truer way. But I suspect one reason that resolutions are soon dropped or fall away is that they often don't really arise from a deep consideration, a serious consideration of one's own life. But they tend to arise more from a kind of reaction to a perceived immediate problem that we have. Now, our Zen practice is fundamentally a deep and ongoing consideration of life. In our Zazen, we fearlessly commit to see our life as it is. We commit to not turning away from whatever arises as we sit, breathing in and out, being aware of body and breath. And then, of course, in our chanting, our ceremonies, our study, perhaps a reflection on the vows, which we'll be doing after I finish this talk. And I think even in the humdrum of our daily life, once we are really kind of deeper into our practice, the questions, how shall I live? As what kind of person? These questions, or some version of them, are really close to the surface. And I think with these questions in mind, I thought about what calligraphy to write for the new year. Not as a resolution, but as a reminder of my intention. How shall I live? As what kind of person? So this is on the website now. Or you see that? And then do you want to just hold it up to the camera so then other people could have a quick look at it as well? People on Zoom. Yeah, is that good? Thank you. So in this calligraphy, I wrote two characters, ji-hi, as they're pronounced in Japanese. And jihi is often translated as compassion into English, or also vice versa. When they translate compassion, they often write jihi in Japanese. And then I added, of course, at the bottom here, an enso, this circle as well. And I'll talk about that a little bit more in a few moments here. Now, at first, when I was thinking about what I'd like to write, I was thinking of doing the characters for patients. But in talking with Cade, it became clear that compassion would be more appropriate. Now, over the past few years, I try to write a word or a couple of words that reflect a practice or intention that feels particularly important or significant at that time. Last year, for example, I wrote the word release, to kind of let go of what we're holding on to during this time. Because so much had happened over the past several years, right? The pandemic and its effects, I think, have deeply altered everyone's world. And then, as the pandemic abated, you could hear talk of, well, great, things are going to go back to normal, right? Things are going to go back to normal, the pre-pandemic state. But, of course, we know from our practice there is no going back to the pre-pandemic state because those conditions are no longer present. Shinryu Suzuki, the Japanese priest who first brought this form of Zen practice from Japan to North America, famously summed up all the essence of training of Zen as everything changes. Everything changes. So obvious, isn't it? Everything changes. And yet, so frightening. After all, there are things we don't want to change. Things that we do want to go back to how they were, at least in our imagination. We imagine them as being so sweet, beautiful, back then. And while patience is necessary, I think right now, as we meet the changes in our life and in the world, compassion is how we accept those changes and how we respond to them. So I picked up my brush and I wrote jihi. The paper that I write on is not the traditional rice paper. It's a multimedia paper. And it really behaves differently. So I'm still playing with the brush and ink and figuring out how to write well on this kind of paper. Now, originally, these two characters, ji, hi, are, and they are still in Buddhist terminology, two discrete terms. But over time, their meanings kind of complemented each other so much that they came together to express the idea of coming to aid someone who is suffering and bestowing ease. So the first character, ji, this one at the very top, is a translation of the ancient Sanskrit word maitri, or Pali metta, meaning in Pali or Sanskrit, meaning friendliness is one translation, or kindness. And often in English today, it's translated as loving kindness, one of the four Brahma Viharas, or four divine abodes. And he, the next character, is the character that they use to translate karuna, which is compassion, often directly compassion, which basically is the desire to end or to ease the suffering of other people. Karuna. And according to one etymology, karuna is composed of kar, meaning to make or to do, and una is action, to make action. So throughout the Buddhist texts, we see compassion is not only a feeling or a state of mind, but also the aspiration to actively help. So we can think of empathy perhaps as, oh, I feel so bad for that person. But it kind of stops there. Compassion, bringing forward that feeling, that desire, feeling sorry for that person, feeling that resonant of that suffering, and then extending your hand. According to Narada Mahatera, who was a very famous Buddhist monk, scholar, and translator from Sri Lanka, translated many Buddhist texts quite a long time ago. He wrote, one of the Buddha's definitions of karuna is that which makes the heart of the good quiver when others are afflicted with sorrow. Isn't that beautiful? The heart quivers when you see others afflicted with sorrow. And he goes on to write that which dissipates the suffering of others. So there's two qualities there. And then another great scholar, this time from the Tibetan tradition, Dr. Thubten Jinpa, who contemporary scholar now in the States, but also he was the principal English translator for the Dalai Lama, and is, in his own research, kind of a pioneer in the study of compassion. Anyway, Dr. Jinpa defines compassion kind of like this. He writes, broadly defined, compassion is a sense of concern that arises when we are confronted with another's suffering and feel motivated to see that suffering relieved. So in other words, compassion in the Buddhist tradition is a response to the inevitable reality of our human condition, our experiences of pain and sorrow, and offers the possibility of responding with patience, kindness, and perhaps some kind of action that will bring relief. And at the heart of compassion is the invitation to turn towards the suffering of others and oneself. In compassion, we begin to realize just as longing for love or respect or contentment is the story that we share with everyone else, so too is suffering universal and part of our shared story. Who alive right now or in the past has been free of sickness, old age, and death? Who has been free of all sadness, disappointment, and grief? Right? Suffering is just part of the human story. It's part of the human condition just as much as love is part of our human condition. It is true, though, there are painful moments in each life when deep loneliness or grief, despair or fear rise up like a great tide, and we feel solitary in that suffering, and we feel apart from everyone else. And yet, there may also be moments in the very midst of that suffering when we open our eyes and we see the same suffering mirrored in the eyes or in the lives of other people around us. Now, I've told this story before, I know, but I think it bears repeating here. As some of you know, I had a very complicated and difficult relationship with my older brother, David. 4 years older, he was 4 years older than I. In his adulthood, he was alcoholic and abused prescription drugs quite a bit. And he was at times very arrogant and eager to give advice that was not asked for, and quite judgmental. Anyway, by the time he was in his late 30s, his life had begun to crumble. And by the time he reached his early 40s, the mixture of prescription drugs and alcohol had left him with a broken marriage, jobless, and disconnected from all his friends. And he tried to commit suicide several times. And once, this is a long time ago, but during a weekend retreat with Norman Fisher at UBC, I had called home our house sitter or person who was staying there for some reason and learned that David had tried again, this time by cutting into his stomach with a hunting knife. And while driving home from the retreat that night, feeling deeply sad, helpless, and very angry with my brother, we drove along Cordova Street, right, coming back from UBC, we lived on the North Shore at that time. And as we passed just before and then along Oppenheimer Park, I was looking out the car window, and I saw the many homeless, the prostitutes, the addicts in the park, the alleyways, and along the street. And in a moment of clarity, the suffering of those men and women and the suffering of my brother and my own suffering felt deeply connected, kind of like streams flowing into a great river. No boundaries. And there is a saying, misery loves company. Which I find very flippant, because it does not really recognize how suffering can connect. I prefer the words of Maha Gosananda, the great Cambodian monk, who led peace marches across the Cambodian countryside at the fall of the Khmer Rouge. Maybe you remember, Cambodia was littered with landmines at that time. To walk leading peace marches was greatly dangerous. And though his own family, Maha Gosananda's own family, and countless friends and many of his disciples had been massacred by the Khmer Rouge, he worked tirelessly to bring unity and peace to his war-torn country. Maha Gosananda said, "Those who know suffering know the Dharma. Those who know suffering know the Dharma." In his book, Step by Step, he wrote this poem: "Cambodia has suffered deeply. From deep suffering comes deep compassion. From deep compassion comes a peaceful heart. From a peaceful heart comes a peaceful person. From a peaceful person comes a peaceful family and a peaceful community. And from peaceful communities come a peaceful nation." and from peaceful nations come a peaceful world. I mentioned earlier, compassion invites us to turn toward suffering, to turn toward the struggles, sorrows, and challenges that are in every human life. Because to turn away is to hunker down in denial and avoidance, to really disconnect, I think, from the shared story of all beings. At some point, we have all experienced the touch and healing of compassion. A kind word, a hand on the shoulder, a hug, a generous action, the willing presence of another. Something like that brings ease, and our suffering is softened. And haven't we all also, at some point, reached out to another to help, to support, to show care? Maybe there's a memory in you right now, kind of springing forward at some time that you deeply received compassion, or maybe you were the one who gave compassion at that point. I think those times are very precious. And although we forget them in the busyness and momentum of our daily lives, we should try to remember them. In part, they are priceless because they give us a glance at a life that is not defined by I, me, you, them, the other, but a world of just living beings all connected. Kind of like a number of squash on a single vine. There's a delightful image of a painting I saw, kind of a humorous painting of squash, right? And they're all arguing, right? And this Japanese priest comes up and says, "You idiots, can't you see you're all connected?" And we are. We're like squawking, arguing, little squash. But we're all connected on a single vine. And this is the liberating insight that compassion brings. We are all interconnected. It is the wisdom that arises from compassion. Dogen Zenji wrote a poem about this, about this view of being free of I, me, you, them, other. Here's his short poem. The true person is not anyone in particular, but like the deep blue color of the endless sky. It is everyone, everywhere in the world. So compassion is the embodiment of this understanding. It's the gateway to wisdom and the expression of wisdom. It's the energy with which we engage with the great and small sufferings that we inevitably meet. And Dogen knew that we should not try to escape from the trials and sufferings that we see in the world, but understand those too as our practice, as gateways into wisdom. He wrote, "Those who regard worldly affairs as an obstacle to their training do not realize that there is nothing such as worldly affairs to be distinguished from the great way." And he wrote in another passage, kind of emphasizing this, "When great compassion is deep within you, and your wish to spiritually aid sentient beings everywhere is well seasoned, there are no obstructions." Well, maybe for someone like Dogen, there are no obstructions. But for those of us who are not so well seasoned, compassion can be kind of a challenge. To engage in compassion, we need courage. And even though we may feel a deep empathy, a kind of quivering of the heart of that person on the side of the road or someone you see out of the window of your car, without courage, compassion does not come forward. Now, I was thinking about this and I realized I really don't know how to usefully define courage. But I feel it is a sense or a rooted understanding that there is something more important, more vital than my fear. I believe courage is something we nurture, or rather perhaps a quality that we forge in the heat of difficulty. Because courage always involves risk. Sometimes that risk is physical, but most of the time it's concerned with the views of others. What will they think? How often, when courage is required, does a small or maybe a loud voice of warning speak inside of possible mistakes, of unpopularity? Oh, say that, you won't be liked. Judgment, blame, being insufficient, rejected, danger. When I look and think about my own life, it seems to me that listening and giving in to that voice almost inevitably weighs far more heavily afterwards than taking the risk. So one way we can nurture our courage, I think, is through zazen. On a cushion, bench, or chair, we kind of open up to the sensations of the body, the arising and passing away of emotions and thoughts. And over time, we are able to simply witness what is unpleasant and painful as it appears. Rather than reacting to it or pushing it away. Witnessing, rather than reacting or escaping, is an act of compassion to ourselves. I witness this. I don't like it, but I see it, and I don't push it away. This practice, I think, weakens the stultifying internal narratives of self and the world that we tell ourselves over and over again, which are only partial true at best. Just going back to Dogen, in his essay, Guidelines for Studying the Way, he wrote this little passage. All Buddha's compassion and sympathy for sentient beings are neither for their own sake nor for others. It's just the nature of Buddha Dharma. Isn't it apparent that insects and animals nurture their offspring, exhausting themselves with painful labors, yet in the end have no reward when their offsprings are grown? In this way, the compassion of small creatures for their offspring naturally resembles the thought of all Buddhas for sentient beings. The inconceivable Dharma of all Buddhas is not compassion alone, but compassion is the basis of the various teachings that appear universally. Already, you are children of Buddhas. So here Dogen is telling us, you know, compassion is our birthright. It is the open and natural condition of our very being. Of all being, even of insects. In my calligraphy, as I mentioned earlier, for the new year, I wrote the enso, right? The circle. The Zen symbol representing wisdom or emptiness. Compassion and wisdom go together, as close as water and milk will go together. It's an image from one of the sutras. Blend completely. Compassion and wisdom go together, each supporting each other, but that's not quite right. Each is the very embodiment of the other. Wisdom, the understanding of our intimacy, our deep connection, interbeing, the ever-changing nature of all things. I think that would be, if we just had that insight, it would be very cold without compassion. And compassion without wisdom, if there could be such a thing, I think would lack meaningful engagement. Dogen frequently wrote about the Bodhisattva of Compassion, Canon or Avalokiteshvara. And one translation of Avalokiteshvara is the one who knows or hears the cries of the world. I'm sure many of you have heard that before. The one who hears the cries of the world. So Avalokiteshvara understands the suffering of others as her own suffering. In the sense of, it's just like the kind of suffering I too experience or will experience. I think the reason that Dogen held Avalokiteshvara in such high regard is that she represents the true nature of compassion, that it is wisdom itself. When we act compassionately, we do not somehow dissolve into the other. We do not make a gift of ourselves, self-sacrificing ourselves in some way. And we don't gain something for ourselves. But in an act of compassion, the sense of self and the sense of others is reconciled. Compassion is not a transaction. It's an act of wisdom. A dropping away of self and other, however brief or however great. So in this sense, compassion is an open gift. No expectation of reciprocity or gratitude. Just reaching out. Maybe like a parent reaching out to pick up their crying child. So this isn't something we cultivate by ourselves in solitude somewhere on our cushion, away from the hurly-burly of social life. We must be willing to engage with the tragedy and pain, not only of those who love us, but those of the countless strangers that cross our path. And with the situations that we may really recoil from. I think it's only with this kind of engagement that we come to truly know our own patience, our own dignity, and openness of heart. Jihi, compassion. I encourage us all to bring to mind when that little voice appears, you're about to reach out, and the little voice appears and says, "Ah, you may be making a mistake. Oh, maybe they won't like this, or what will the other person think?" Whenever you hear that little voice, say to yourself, "There is something more important than my fear." See if you can then reach out. And maybe you'll make a mistake. And maybe other people will think, why? Think something of you. So what? Let us, this year, give life to compassion. Thank you.